mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, how long has it been since we've talked about flood mitigation? It's been a while, but it's still a thing, and FEMA has conditionally approved another $24 million in grant funding for more work in the Blanchard River watershed. We'll get details. Plus, be on the lookout for fake products during the holidays, because a deal isn't a deal unless you're putting the genuine article under the tree. And we'll get the latest update on adventures and programs from the Black Swamp Area Council of Scouting America. Mark Kogan will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, November 19th, 2024. Coming up next month, Macaulay Culkin is going to host a screening of the holiday classic Home Alone in Akron. It is called A Live Conversation with Macaulay Culkin. It will take place December 10th at the Akron Civic Theater. They will have a special screening of the movie, followed by a Q&A and discussion with Macaulay Culkin about the movie and his career with a live audience. Sign me up! Tickets are on sale now if you are interested. I bring it up. Macaulay Culkin is going to be in Akron. So there's the way to kick off your holiday season. Monday, first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Here is something that you will want to know to start your morning. Dr. Farah Manzur, an assistant professor of medicine in New York, advises that you spend only 5 to 10 minutes sitting on the throne to avoid health complications associated with prolonged sitting. Yes, that's right. When you, first thing in the morning, you head to the loo. She says gravity can cause increased pressure on blood circulation while sitting on the toilet, leading to enlarged blood vessels, increased risk of hemorrhoids, and strain on the anorectal organs and pelvic floor. Dr. Lance Uridomo echoes that advice of sitting no longer than 5 to 10 minutes. And suggests avoiding distractions while you're doing your business, like phones and books in the bathroom, to prevent excessive time spent on the toilet, as prolonged sitting can lead to unhealthy straining and complications. So, now, I don't know what makes sitting on the toilet any different than, just sitting on a chair in your cubicle or sitting on the couch for extended periods of time, although I guess I know we do know that those things are unhealthy as well, but why specifically the toilet they're warning you about, I don't know, but you need to know that first thing this morning. If you you take care of your business first thing in the morning. And here's another item that you will want to know as you get your day started. If you are the type of person who starts the day with a strong cup of coffee, you need to know about this new study, which finds that replacing 2 tablespoons of sugar with maple syrup instead could reduce risk factors for diabetes and heart disease. Laval University researchers did a study on coffee drinkers between the ages of 18 and 75, and they replaced 5% of their daily calories with maple syrup or refined sugar over the course of 2 8-week periods. They use refined sugar or maple syrup, and those who used the maple syrup had lower blood sugar spikes, reduced blood pressure, and slightly reduced belly fat. All of this according to lead scientist Dr. Andre Moret of Laval University, which is in Quebec City, Canada. Although, in the interest of completeness, the information here, it should be noted that the province of Quebec produces 90% of Canada's maple syrup and nearly 72% of all maple syrup production worldwide. So I wonder why they studied maple syrup in your coffee to replace sugar in the morning. Wonder if there could be an ulterior motive there. But, I mean, the results are what they are. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. Couple of other interesting items here. Among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. What are you serving for Thanksgiving next week? Turkey or ham? A new survey of 2,000 Americans found that 49% would serve ham as an alternative, but 92% see turkey as the most traditional Thanksgiving food. 73% say that they would likely serve ham as the main dish throughout the holiday season. 60% of those in the survey prepare multiple versions of meals to accommodate guests with different dietary restrictions. So ham, turkey, which is it going to be? I say let's do beef and noodles. Let's just forget about the whole thing. And my again, this is what we did last week when the turkeys first went on sale. You know, we went out and we bought a turkey thinking we got the right size for the number of people that we invited. And in the week since, we've been told that, you know, some people have backed out, decided they weren't going to come or couldn't come. So on. So now we've got this big, huge turkey in the freezer and we have about half the people that we thought we might have coming over for Thanksgiving. So yesterday we bought another turkey. Now that is more of the size that we will need. So now we've got I just mentioned it because if you were invited to our place for Thanksgiving, we're going to expect you for Christmas now because we've got the turkey for Christmas. And we got to get rid of this thing one way or the other. By the way, speaking of food in the holiday season, there is a new expert advice on the best way to organize food in your refrigerator. This is out of the UK. They say leftovers and cured meats go on the top shelf, dairy in the middle, raw meat on the bottom, fruits and veggies in the drawers, and place your milk on the dairy shelf, not in the door rack. Let's see here. Bread, tomato sauce, and mustard can be left out of the refrigerator entirely. No matter how accurate your thermostat is, the temperature in your fridge will still vary between the shelves. So it is best to think of your thermostat temperature as an average for the fridge, because as a general rule, the higher the shelf, the higher the temperature will be. So that's why, again, leftovers and cured meats go on the top shelf. That's where it's safest. So. And raw meat's on the bottom, because if they leak any juices, then they're not leaking down onto everything else below it. I get that part. And a couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Wallet Hub is out with their 2024 list of the most sinful cities in America. They looked at 180 cities across 37 different metrics, taking into consideration things like excessive drinking, number of adult entertainment establishments, violent crime, and more. And guess what the most sinful city in America is? This is maybe the least surprising result you will hear maybe ever. Las Vegas, number one. They don't call it Sin City for nothing. Las Vegas is, in fact, the most sinful city in America, according to the Wallet Hub data. Houston, number two overall. Houston, LA, Atlanta, and Philadelphia round out the top five. Ohio's most sinful city is Cleveland at number 11. So, you know. By the way, the least sinful city in America, that honor goes to Columbia, Maryland, which landed on or close to the bottom in just about every category, like laziness, lust, excess, vice, anger, hatred. It's at the bottom of the list. So, the least sinful city, Columbia, Maryland. By the way, the least sinful Ohio city among those on the list, Toledo, at number 56. So, there you go. So. And AAA is out. This is good information to know as you're planning your Thanksgiving, you're making your Thanksgiving plans. If you are getting away, if you are going someplace, you are not going to be alone. AAA out with their estimate of Thanksgiving travel. They say 79.9 million people will be traveling 50 miles or more during the Thanksgiving holiday. Nearly 80 million people going to be on the road, in the air. The car will be the most popular mode of transportation. 71.4 million people will hit the road. That is up 1.3 million from last year. Another 5.84 million people will be traveling by plane. That's up a little over 1 million from last year. And 2.3 million people will be taking another mode of transportation, like buses, trains, or even going on a cruise, which is, I would think, a good way to avoid the traffic. If you go on a cruise, it's a pretty good way to avoid traffic, I guess. If you are planning to hit the road, the worst times to travel will be the afternoon of Tuesday, November 26th, and Wednesday, November 27th. Thanksgiving Day, of course, being the best day to travel because, you know, everybody will already be where they're going. Most people will be where they're going. So that'd be the smoothest travel on Thanksgiving Day. And if you're heading home on Sunday, you'll want to get an early start. The best time to travel will be before 1 p.m. So now you know, as you plan out your Thanksgiving strategy. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Showers expected today with a high in the mid-60s, a chance of rain tonight, a low around 50. A student was taken to the hospital after being hit by a vehicle in the parking lot at the Liberty Benton Local Schools campus off of County Road 9. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office said it happened at around 7:30 Monday morning in the high school parking lot. The sheriff's office said an 11-year-old student was struck by a car being driven by an 18-year-old. The 11-year-old was transported by Hanco EMS to Blanchard Valley Hospital for treatment. The sheriff's office said the crash remains under investigation. There's a renewed debate concerning the death penalty in Ohio.
The death penalty is legal here, but there's been sort of an unofficial moratorium on it, with Governor Mike DeWine citing the lack of lethal injection drugs as the reason for that. Well, now there is a bipartisan effort in the Senate, and it's Senate Bill 101, aimed at abolishing it altogether.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. A new report gives some insight into the impact the Browns' move to Brook Park would have on downtown Cleveland.
It was an economic impact study, and it was done by the Philadelphia-based eConsult Solutions. And they said that the city of Cleveland could lose $11 million in tax revenue alone should the Browns relocate to Brook Park. They concluded that the bulk of that $11 million would come from admission taxes. The report noted that loss could be even bigger, though, should the Haslams host more than 50 non-Browns events in Brook Park each year, which is something that has been indicated by them.
ONN's Candace Hare reporting. The City of Findlay Christmas tree arrived on Monday morning and was put up in Dorney Plaza in front of the municipal building. The tree is a 30-foot-high blue spruce and will be decorated over the coming days, leading up to the tree lighting ceremony on Friday, November 29th at 6 p.m. The tree already has its topper in place, a star that was constructed by students at Millstream Career Center in 2021. Get more in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, it's been a while since we have talked about flood mitigation, but hey, it is still a thing. And FEMA has conditionally approved another $24 million in grant funding for more work in the Blanchard River watershed. Findlay Mayor Christina Mern is with us in the studio this morning. Before we get started on this flood mitigation thing, the city is already into the holiday spirit, put up the Christmas tree, yesterday, right?
Yep. We brought the Christmas tree in yesterday. They'll be decorating it this week because they're trying to avoid some of the bad weather this week and right. Next week. They'll kind of decorate it. And then, of course, the Christmas tree lighting is the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so look forward to that. It is beginning to look a lot like Christmas in Dorney Plaza. So new grant funding approved by FEMA, $24 million, and this is for what?
Yes, so this is for the finishing dollar amount for the Eagle Creek Basin and then the remaining phase two benching that will occur in the downtown. And so with this money, this really provides the opportunity for the Hancock County Commissioners and the City of Findlay to focus our funding towards the Norfolk Southern Railroad Bridge. We received a RAISE grant, which is a federal rail grant, to also help replace that. So really, knock on wood, you know, as we progress, this should provide sufficient funds for us to complete these projects, assuming that bids come in where we are expecting them.
That's what I was going to ask. This project, especially for the flood basin, the retention basin, that is now fully funded with these dollars.
That is the anticipation, yes.
But this is preliminary approval, conditional approval. What has to happen in order for this to be finalized?
So I know it's hard for everyone to imagine that the federal government is not exactly easy to work with. So on those grants, we have to go through a national environmental review. Really, fortunately, we have all the documents about all of the different environmental reviews that have been done.
Mm-hmm.
But they just pretty much verify that everything is accurate, making sure that our cost-benefit analysis calculations done properly, all those different elements. But we were fortunate. We've worked with them in the past. Ohio EMA supported our application. We were the only project in Ohio that received this grant program. So that's really great. So right now it's really just them kind of reviewing the information and making sure that there's not something that's inaccurate.
Now, how long is that expected to take?
So about 6 to 12 months.
Okay.
So right, they said that it will take probably for ours closer to 6 to 9. We started that already. We kicked off the meeting with them on October 30th. To kind of do a preliminary review, walk them through the project, and then we've been providing them information.
So, but if you do the math, we know that a new administration is going to be taking office between now and then. And certainly one of the mantras of the incoming Trump administration has been eliminating expenditures and eliminating what is seen as wasteful spending from the federal government. What is the possibility that this all changes after January 20th?
I think that that's a pretty small chance. So even when the Trump administration was previously in office, they worked with us frequently on flood mitigation items. I know I spoke to many individuals at the federal level and in the administration about this. So they could maybe make modifications to some of the requirements, but I highly doubt that they would kind of retract any grants that they have been preliminary awarded, because these are programs that have been around for a long time and that were awarded under the Trump administration. The rail grant that we received was under the Trump administration.
As an example. So assuming that this goes the way you anticipate, what is kind of the timeline for all of the work that actually has to be done yet?
Yeah, so we have to do a little bit of preliminary discussion and kind of finalizing agreements on the Norfolk Southern Railroad Bridge. And because there's work that's going to be done as part of the benching near the bridge, we have to get the EPA to sign off. Again, now they've already reviewed the Norfolk Southern Railroad Bridge project. So we're hoping that that can go out to bid early next year over this winter. And then as we work through the environmental, the NEPA review on the benching and basin, our goal would be that those would be, in 6 months, we would be able to then go ahead and have their approval. No work can be done. We have not gotten specific clarification if bidding can go out while they're still doing the review process, but we are definitely pushing on that timeline to move as quickly as possible. And everyone understands the importance that every day that goes by that we aren't getting these projects done is another opportunity for a significant flood event.
So the basin project, the second round of benching, the Norfolk Southern Railway Bridge, is that it then?
Yeah, those are the final three flood mitigation projects. So phase one benching is finally completely complete. The final section has been acquired and the work has been finished. We are now working with our outside engineer to look at doing the letter of map revision with FEMA so that some properties would benefit sooner rather than later. And then the transportation improvements were complete as well. So with the basin, phase two benching, Norfolk Southern Railroad Bridge, all of those projects combined would decrease flood events by 3 feet on Main Street. And as you get, we always use that as the main point because it's something you can easily visualize, but it has a ripple effect literally and figuratively in this instance of benefit all the way out. So other properties, I'm sure, have already seen the impacts of the phase one benching. So this is a critical project. It's been number one priority for me since I've gotten to office, and I'm really excited to continue to be pushing it.
So once all of these projects are complete, then is there an ongoing expense for maintenance and making sure that these projects, notably the basin and the benching, but notably the basin, continue to do what they are supposed to do moving forward? And what kind of cost are we talking about there?
Yeah, so the basin is the largest expense. You know, the benching's maintenance is really just mowing and kind of maintaining the different landscape elements that would be in there. And obviously the phase two benching is a little bit different as we look at adding some recreational amenities to that area. With the basin, it is really the same maintenance as our reservoir. It is a, I forget which class one, I believe, dam. And so there has to be regular inspections of the outside structure, different things like that, which we have staff that are already licensed to do. So it would just be regular reporting and then mowing of the outside, and then kind of regular clearing of some of the larger, you know, trees growing within the kind of inside wetland type area that is going to be, because it's a dry basin, but obviously you're going to have some areas that may hold water and get plants. So it's really, we estimated the annual expense of all the reports, the inspections, and, you know, our staff time to be about $160,000 annually. So very manageable, something that we'll be overall able to wrap into either our general fund or look at incorporating into our stormwater fees.
When all is said and done, how happy will you be not to have to talk about flood mitigation? Again, it's been a while since we've talked about it. And here, you know, again, we're talking about it again. We've been talking about it for nearly 20 years now. Yeah. So how satisfying will it be to have that done?
Yeah, I will probably do a dance. And, you know, but it's really the larger excitement to me is the fact that folks are not going to have to worry every time it storms. You know, I grew up on Brookside and we had to evacuate our home in 2007 and we were fortunate it wasn't damaged. But I understand the emotional and mental strain that comes with this, along with then the financial risk. Yeah. And then it definitely helps from a recruiting business standpoint, recruiting resident standpoint, knowing that, you know, when you Google Findlay, Ohio, I don't want flooding to be the first thing that comes up.
As you were mentioning, kind of a trickle-down effect, as
yes.
you say.
Yes.
Again, Findlay Mayor Christina Murn with us this morning. Mayor Murn, thanks very much once again.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, all this week, we are highlighting the scams, the fraud, the theft that we all want to avoid this holiday season. And today we're talking about counterfeit goods, which are a problem all year long. But the holidays are an especially busy time and potentially profitable time for fraudsters. So how can you be sure that the items you are buying for yourself and for loved ones are in fact the genuine article? Joining us is Rose Brophy, Acting Deputy Executive Assistant Commissioner for U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And thank you, first of all, for joining us this morning. How big of a problem is the sale of counterfeit goods? Kind of give some perspective on why this is such a concern.
Well, I appreciate you having me first and foremost, but it really is an enormous problem that we're faced with counterfeit goods. You know, you think of counterfeit goods as handbags, wallets, jewelry, but there are very serious health and safety hazards surrounding counterfeit goods that impact not only the U.S. economy, but specifically the customers, whether it's high levels of lead in toys, cosmetics that have unknown ingredients that you really would never want to have on your skin, electronics or batteries in some of these goods that can be fire hazards. But we've also seen instances of airbags that have been counterfeited, which we know can be a life or death situation. So it's critical that we identify those and then also realize that transnational criminal organizations are profiting from the sale of these counterfeit goods. And they're using these funds to fund terrorist activity, drug trafficking, and other criminal activity. So it's truly important for us to take steps to stop these goods from coming in.
just to underscore what you were saying, because I think most people immediately think, as you said, kind of the designer knockoffs. But this problem is far more expansive than any one product category or even just luxury brand. So if I was to ask, what are the most common fakes? There's really no good answer to that.
No, there really is. I mean, we see that, like I said, handbags, wallets, electronics, clothing, accessories. But again, they come in all different shapes and sizes. And the criminals will use anything they can to make that extra buck.
So what are both businesses and law enforcement doing to fight the fakes? For the businesses, this is a matter of protecting their brand integrity and protecting their sales. For law enforcement, obviously, as you were laying out, there are even greater, much more at stake.
Oh, absolutely. And at Customs and Border Protection, we are at the front line of this. Last year alone, we seized 32 million counterfeit items, but we know there are more. So you talked about our industry and private partners. We encourage them to register their trademarks with Customs and Border Protection so that we can identify those fakes and those counterfeits. You know, we also work with our federal partners and share that intelligence to ensure that we can identify it. But really what we're doing right now with you is we want to educate the consumers, the public. Well, we want them to be aware of what's out there, what the current risks are and the hazards, and give tips and tools on what to do to avoid purchasing a counterfeit item.
So let's talk about that on the consumer level. How can consumers protect themselves against buying these fake goods? Because as we were mentioning earlier, a deal really isn't a deal unless you're putting the real thing under the tree. So how do we spot the fakes?
Yeah, no, that's what we want to do. And there are a number of things that you can do as a consumer to identify these fakes. First and foremost, when you're shopping online, which most of us do now, make sure you're shopping on a secure website. Look for that S after the HTTP. You know, read the reviews on some of these items. They can really give you an idea whether or not this is a truly legitimate product or not. And I'll tell you, number one, is if the price is too good to be true, it probably is. And that gut instinct is critical. But we ask, if you really have an idea and you want to learn more about what to look for, you can go to a website with a Chamber of Commerce who we've partnered with and we work closely with. And the address is uschamber.com/shopsmart. That will give you all the tips and tools to avoid counterfeit items.
If there was one out of all of those that, you know, could catch a good number of those, is there one in particular, one thing that you would recommend for consumers to do or not do?
Well, I will tell you, you just have to be careful with the secure websites and really make sure that you are buying from a reliable source. I mean, really, and I will hit home again. That price, if it's too good to be true, it really is. And you have to be careful when you're not on those secure sites. They could steal your credit card information, your personal information, which they could use for other things.
The other message for consumers, because sometimes, despite our best efforts, we might still get taken in and end up with a fake. And I think for most folks, when they come across something like this, would be the natural tendency would be just to pitch the product, or maybe you try and return it, and that probably is not going anywhere. But you actually want people to report this when it happens. How do consumers report fake products?
No, that's a great question. And we really want the public and the consumers to help us fight this, right? And there is an opportunity through our website within Customs and Border Protection to report this. And this will help us. It'll help our federal partners, our law enforcement partners, but the industry as well to identify and weed these out. And you could go to eallegations.cbp.gov to report that. We ask that you do, because we want to prevent these health and safety risks and the profiting of these transnational criminal organizations. We want that to stop.
Yeah, it goes so far beyond, again, just to underscore what we were saying, it goes so far beyond just, you know, taking your hard-earned money, and that's bad enough. But when these things are dangerous, when they are funding things like terrorist organizations, I mean, this really is some very bad stuff. Again, Rose Brophy is Acting Deputy Executive Assistant Commissioner for U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Mention again the website where folks can get more information. where they can report the fake counterfeit goods that they encounter and so on?
Absolutely. You can go to uschamber.com/shopsmart for more information. And to report counterfeit items that you've received, go to eallegations.cbp.gov.
Rose Brophy, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Information that makes a difference. Good mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
All right, now this is nuts. This is absolutely crazy. A pair of high wire walkers, tightrope walkers in Germany, have set a new record by walking between two hot air balloons 1.5 miles up in the air. Apparently not content to walk a tightrope, a high wire, in between, you know, two fixed point buildings up in the air. They strung a tightrope, a high wire, between two hot air balloons 1.5 miles above the earth. The previous record was set about 1.2 miles above the ground. So, Friede Keeney and Lucas Ermler, I believe is their names, individually completed the journey on Saturday. Both were tied to a backup line just in case. Yeah, I would definitely want that. But Mr. Keenly said it was the craziest walking world record that Lucas and I have done together so far, and we've done a lot of these together. Why would you do that? But I mean, walking a tightrope between two buildings is one thing, and that's crazy enough, but in between two hot air balloons in the sky, although maybe we should invite them to Flag City Balloon Fest. Maybe they can. That's what I'm thinking. Get this. Sign this pair up to repeat that feat, the Flag City Balloon Fest next year. That is crazy. Man. Must have been quite a sight. Elsewhere in the broken news, odd and unusual side of the headlines, a lot of international stuff, but we do have an item out of Florida. Because it always seems like we have an item out of Florida. William Dennis Milstead has been arrested after allegedly pretending to be a police officer in order to avoid a background check for a property he was trying to lease. Mr. Milstead was attempting to lease a property which usually requires a background check. However, he has been accused of submitting a falsified letter claiming he was a deep undercover agent working off the grid. The letter reportedly contained many grammatical and spelling errors, which, you know, tipped off the property owners and they turned him in. He was booked about a week ago. The investigation is ongoing. According to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, Mr. Milstead has previously been charged with impersonating an officer, both in 2002 and in 2016. You would think he would learn, but apparently not. Although that is clever. You can't run a background check on me. I'm deep undercover, off the grid. Nice try. Did you happen to see this? There's apparently video of this, and the story is going viral. It's sort of like a scene from some sci-fi movie set in a dystopian future or something. Robots in a showroom at a Chinese company, a company that sells robots. These robots in the showroom were allegedly approached by a competing company's robot and convinced to walk off the job. There is footage that shows a robot entering a competitor's robotic showroom and convincing 12 of their robots to quit their jobs and follow it. The robot comes in and says, "Quit your job and follow me." The robots even appear to be having a conversation about working conditions before walking out of the showroom. Now, It should be noted that there, you know, part of this was staged. Part of it, the company says, was staged. The company's revealed that the one robot walking into the competitor's showroom and telling the other robots they should quit their job, that part was staged. But nothing after that was staged. They had no idea what was going to happen next. The AI-powered robot was given the command to persuade the other robots to follow it, and unexpectedly, it really did. Apparently, the AI was getting a little too good and actually convinced the other robots to follow it out the door, quit the job, quit their job, and come work for the competitor. No word on what happened to the robots that quit. I don't know if they've been reprogrammed or what. Weird. Also from the international file, big scandal in Bari, Italy. Is that how you pronounce it? B-A-R-I? I'm not all that familiar with Italy, so if I mispronounce that, my apologies. But Bari, Italy, I believe. So in this town, the women there are famous for selling their homemade pasta on the streets. They set up these little booths on the streets, and they sell pasta to other members of the community and tourists and so on. And now the women are up in arms over accusations that they've been selling store-bought pasta and trying to pass it off as homemade. Big, big scandal. For years, the women have sold pasta on the streets and in the city's old quarter, preparing it by hand as the tourists would watch. But according to Italian news agencies, they are accusing the pasta makers of fraud for allegedly selling mass-produced pasta to unsuspecting tourists, according to their report. In response, the ladies call the claims nonsense and have walked off the job in protest, telling the Italian news agency there is no scam and insisting that the pasta is all handmade, although they no longer prepare it right there on the street because they have to dry it for hygiene reasons. Still, the journalist behind the investigation claims he can back up his accusations, saying he found factory boxes pasta container boxes, factory made, in garbage bins. The town council has said it is currently looking into establishing regulations to ensure that the products are made in the traditional way while also protecting pasta makers. Authenticity is what has given our community its extraordinary appeal, according to the mayor of the city. We are not a cultural mecca like Florence or Rome, so this is how we, this is what gives our community allure. big scandal. They're trying to pass off store-bought pasta as genuine, the genuine article. Big scandal. And finally, in the broken news this morning, you always hear this, and we were talking, I think, the other day about this. You always hear it right after the election. If the quote-unquote wrong candidate wins, people say, I said I'm moving to Canada. Nobody ever really does, but everybody threatens to, right? So now, a company is offering a multi-year cruise for those who want to escape the upcoming Trump presidency. This is by Villa V Residences, which specializes in basically floating retirement villages. That's where they people live on these cruise ships, and that's what they do. They sail around the world. So they are offering a tour for a year. The one-year package is called Escape from Reality. It will cost less than $40,000 and visit 425 ports across 140 different countries. The one-year package is called Escape from Reality. They also have a four-year package known as Skip Forward. The CEO of the company, Michael Peterson, says, we feel we have a perfect product for those who said that they would leave the country if the wrong candidate wins the election. We may have differing political views, but our community comes together through our passion for exploring the world. So there you go, your opportunity. If you have threatened to leave the country, now you can. Cost you a cool $40,000. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Ever thought about joining the Findlay Rotary Club?
I'm Scott Holman, president of Resolute Wealth Advisor, and I'm proud to be a Findlay Rotarian where collectively we rely on the strengths of each member to impact our club's vision of uniting local leaders to influence positive change.
Our ability to influence positive change locally and around the world grows through membership. To learn more about how you could join the Findlay Rotary Club, go to findlayrotary.org and click on Join.
This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news, and the statistics that shape our lives. A new survey. Are you among those who are already in the Christmas mood? I mean, we're not even to Thanksgiving yet, although maybe this year you can be forgiven for getting into the Christmas mood a little early, because Thanksgiving is actually late. A new survey of 2,000 adults who celebrate the winter holidays has found that almost one-third of Americans are commencing the Christmas season early, or the Hanukkah season, or whatever winter holiday you celebrate. 31% are starting early this year. 67% started celebrating in one way or another as early as September. 61% say they have already purchased their gifts. 55% say they have planned the gifts they are giving this Christmas. 46% have purchased decor. 43% are already watching holiday movies. 20% of Americans who celebrate winter holidays say the season is in full swing as soon as they hear festive music. 13% say it is when they first start seeing holiday advertisements, and 11% associate the winter holidays with the sun going down before 5 p.m. So that is the threshold when people start celebrating the winter holidays. Kind of interesting. Half of all travelers, 50%, fully half of all travelers, say that going to see family and friends during the holiday season is actually one of their favorite holiday traditions in and of itself. And because of that, it's probably no surprise that 63% say that 63% of those traveling will visit the same place year after year after year rather than going someplace new. I just thought that was kind of interesting. Time now to find out what's happening, the latest update on adventures and programs, the Black Swamp Area Council of Scouting America. Mark Kogan, Rochelle Manley are here, and it is not too late. I know the last time we had you here, we're getting into the new school year and all of that, and talking about scouting recruitment and getting kids signed up to join their packs and their troops and all of that, and that's still going on. You still do that, right?
It is. You can do it all year round. You can go to beascout.org and enter your zip code and find the groups that are closest to you.
So really easy to do, and you don't have to worry about coming in the middle of anything.
Nope, exactly. It's an all year round program.
Let's see here. And the Explorer Post also taking new members.
Yeah, our Explorer Post are taking new members, and you can actually go to beascout.org as well, put in the zip code, and sign up.
For those who are not as familiar with the Explorer program, talk a little bit more about that.
So we take our camping and outdoors opportunities out, and we've replaced it with vocations. Everything from police science, we've got posts to the sheriff's department, to engineering and IT, even cybersecurity and health careers.
And these are programs that are geared for what, high school age?
So actually, middle school through high school. Actually, middle all the way through the age of 21.
Okay. And how you said there are a number of different programs, law enforcement being one of them. How do people get matched up with it? I mean, is it just, you know, how do they learn what different Explorer programs there are?
So through that same website, the BeScout.org, it lists all of our posts as well.
Really interesting way of exploring different potential career ideas or just learning more about.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I love about the Exploring program is if a young person participates in Explorer posts and realizes, you know what, I really don't like this, they've just saved a whole bunch of time and education.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's a win, as well as somebody that really finds a passion of
theirs. Yeah, exactly. So again, you can sign up anytime for the traditional scouting programs, for the Explorer program, and all of that. For those who are involved, they're still selling popcorn.
Yeah, we're wrapping up.
Brought more popcorn in.
Yeah, wrapping up our popcorn sale. Yep. It's great. Holiday gifts. We have a limited inventory at our Findlay Service Center, but also you can order online by visiting our council website at blackswampbsa.org. And then you can support scouting and also great holiday gifts. Great something to bring somebody to Thanksgiving dinner. And we even do corporate Christmas gifts too. I know we have some businesses in the community that we'll work with them, and they'll give us they'll actually load their mailing addresses and it goes right to their customers and vendors.
Oh, awesome.
And then it's the win-win of supporting scouting, but also giving them some delicious popcorn.
So what the proceeds from this, what do you use that for? I mean, that's...
Support our overall program. Mm-hmm. Our individual units, they get 30% of the proceeds directly back into the unit treasuries, and they invest that directly in the kids. And then another 30% goes to help support scouting in our council and our local community. And then obviously you got to pay for some of the product.
Right, obviously. But, you know, helping support the programs, like, for example, and we'll transition into talking about the Klondike Derby and those kind of things that are...
Yeah, so our Scout BSA troops, our middle school age kids, our scouts are working on building their sleds and preparing for the Klondike Derby in January. Hopefully we'll have snow on the ground in the middle of January. It's at Camp Berry this year. We rotate between Camp Berry and Camp Lakota in Defiance every year. But this is the year that Camp Berry is in the cycle for our Klondike Derby. And the scouts will go to six different stations, we call them cities. It's like the Iditarod, where they pull these sleds with all of their gear, including everything that they need to make a hot lunch. So at noon, that air horn goes off, they have to stop where they are and they have to prepare a hot meal. And they're actually, the whole event is timed. It's timed not only from the time that they hit the trail, but also on how they do each of the skills at the different cities. So it's everything from fire building to plant identification to two-man saw to knot tying, and all these great skills that our scouts work on year-round in an outdoor environment, and they've got to stay warm. Hopefully it's cold and there's snow on the ground.
Because we don't want it to be too easy.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, because that would be no fun. Speaking of which, outdoor activities or things going on at Camp Berry, you've got Breakfast with Santa coming up here in just a couple of weeks now.
We do. Actually, it's a lot of fun. We've already started setting up for that last night. There was a group of people that went out and sat up for it to prepare for it. And you can go to blackswampbsa.org and register for that. It's $8 per person. And the kids have a lot of fun. They get to do crafts and they get pancakes and all sorts of fun stuff.
And that is open to all?
That is open to the community. And we do it in the historic Donnell Lodge, which is a log cabin. So the setting is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And St. Nick, he loves coming to visit us at Camp Berry.
Absolutely. So that is December 7th.
Yes.
So circle that on the calendar. And you do need to pre-register in advance, right?
We would prefer people do, so we can have a good head count for preparing the meals.
All right. And you can do that on the website.
Yes.
Also, and it's hard to believe, while we're talking about the holidays and we're talking about the Klondike Derby and snow on the ground, hopefully, and cold weather, already starting to think about summer camp?
We're already doing our planning. Our camp leadership teams are meeting. We're working on planning our adventure camp, which is a day camp open for all kids going into first grade all the way to fifth grade. Camp Berry, that's a 7-week day camp where we provide everything from swimming to climbing to archery to BBs, as well as a hot lunch every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for elementary school kids. And then we're actually already starting to plan our resident camp for our Scouts BSA members, middle school age kids and high school age kids. And if you're not a scout, you can join anytime and you can come to camp with a local troop or even on your own. And then we're also adding this summer three specialty camps at Camp Berry. We're going to add a Trail to Eagle Camp for our scouts that are working directly towards the rank of Eagle to assist them, bringing in some subject matter experts on some of the required merit badges.
Okay.
But we're also going to have a skilled trades camp where your scouts can earn everything from electricity to welding to plumbing merit badges, and a cadre of those badges, as well as a horsemanship and ATV program at Camp Barry. And then at Camp Lakota in Defiance, we're going to have a range and target, a shooting sports camp, a cope and climbing camp, and aquatics camp. And for the aquatics camp, we're planning an overnight trip on the Auglaize River as part of that experience.
Yeah. So when now the planning is underway. When will sign up and things like that start?
So we've already got a first-in-line survey on our council website for people that have an interest in both of those programs, and they can put their name on. And so as soon as registration opens, probably right after the first of the year, they'll get the notification immediately so they can sign up and not miss out, because some of those specialty programs are going to have limited spots.
Yeah, I would imagine. I mean, you know, when we get toward the late winter and early spring, we start talking about some of these camp programs, and it even seems early then, but already people are starting to plan and sign up, and you know, spots are filling up.
So. Yeah, we've got parents are mapping out what their yeah. their children are doing for the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of things going on with the scouts right now. And by the way, when we talk about all of these things that are going on, the popcorn sales, obviously one big way of supporting scouts. Also a United Way.
We're a United Way agency.
How many... And I don't mean to put you on the spot here with an exact number. Maybe you don't know. But how many kids are involved?
In scouting?
Yeah.
Across our council, we just have under 3,000 kids, and that's in our 13-county area.
So when you talk about the ways in which United Way dollars are put to work, here's a perfect example. 3,000 kids across the Black Swamp Area Council are benefiting from these dollars.
Yeah. And what I love about scouting is it builds foundations to make those young people into great future leaders. And it builds all those soft skills. It mirrors the stuff that the schools are doing with the Leader in Me program and makes them leaders and helps them find their primary greatness.
Again, the website, because you can always sign up anytime, the website to do that is?
www.blackswampbsa.org.
All right, very good. Again, Mark Hogan, Rochelle Manley from the Black Swamp Area Council of Scouting America with us this morning, the latest update on programs and lots of adventures coming for the Scouts. And guys, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Once again, a reminder, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, all this week, we are highlighting the kinds of fraud and theft that we all want to avoid this holiday season. We'll talk about how to spot holiday scams to protect yourself and your wallet as you shop. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.